Tonight I'm going to talk about time and our relationship with time. Seems like an appropriate topic right after New Year's, the first Monday of 2021. And I think even just in people sharing about the meditation, we had a lot of different reflections of what the time of the meditation felt like. I think I'll begin by saying our relationship with time, our experience of time, reflects very deeply the quality of our attention. And this is kind of an odd phrase, quality of our attention. I think we live in a time in which there's a tremendous scarcity narrative around attention. You know, either people are paying attention or they're not. You know, it's reduced to this just a binary of is attention on or off. The more we work with attention, you realize that there are you might say resonant depths of attention. You know, I can be attending just in my head. It can be mental focus, or I can be listening in my whole body. You know, I can be listening from a place of deep silence or deep presence, you know. And all these different experiences of attention correspond to different experiences of time. I'll say that it's very sad. I think a lot of people live distracted lives in our culture. And really, we live in a culture in which there are two multi-billion-dollar industries that commodify human attention. You know, the advertising industry and the entertainment industry. And sometimes it almost feels as if a person's attention is more important to those industries than it is to them themselves, you know. When we're distracted, we're not there. When we're distracted, we're not present for what's happening in life in the present moment. You know, something happens, and it might have been right in front of our face. It might have been in our presence, but something happens, and we weren't there when it happened. You know, we might even do something. We might even have a rich experience, but we weren't there when it happened, you know. And I think it's a very sad thing that there are people who get to the end of their lives and they wonder where did my life go? You know? And, you know, essentially my whole life happened and I wasn't there when it happened. When we're distracted, time tends to move quickly. Time moves at this kind of uncontrollable pace, and there's never enough time. And we wonder where the time went, you know, that sort of thing. Now, when we're focused, now there's times also that when we're focused, it can seem that time is going quickly, but then it's more an abundant feel. But also, when we can focus more, when we can bring more presence to our experience of time, then time goes slower. You know, and certainly this is the experience sometimes people have in meditation, that when you're really paying attention in meditation, it feels like it's going really slow. You know, 5 minutes is nothing if you're watching, you know, TV or something, but 5 minutes can be a lot if you've never meditated before to pay attention to your breath for 5 minutes, you know. And so there's a, you might say, a more abundant aspect of time that opens up the more we can pay attention and the deeper the quality of attention we can bring. Attention is ultimately about the ability to be present in the present moment. You know, and there's this very real sense that the past and the future do not exist. You know, the past and the future are mental constructs. but the vitality of our body is in the present moment. If I'm sending tremendous emotional involvement to past or future, essentially, I'm sending tremendous emotional energy away from my body. I'm sending it out into oblivion, you know? And then I wonder why I'm so feeling tired and depleted or something like that, you know? It really is this this core idea of Buddhism, you might say the most fundamental insight of Buddhism, that there's this profound connection between our ability to pay attention and our happiness. You know, the more I can focus, the more I can keep my vital energies and vitality in the present moment, which leads to a much more powerful experience of being here, as well as a much more abundant experience of time. Incidentally, I feel like I should go back and at least, backpedal a little bit on calling out the education, the entertainment industry and the advertising industry. I don't want to make them out as antichrists or anything. I tend to think of entertainment a lot like chocolate. You know, if I have chocolate a couple times a week, no problem. But if I'm eating pounds of chocolate every day, that's a problem, you know? And I think education is, entertainment is a lot like that. I work in education, which has some of the qualities of entertainment sometime, but that's another story. When we're present, part of presence is about being deeply open in the moment. And I think I'll share a Zen koan here, a very powerful Zen koan. This is from the classic literature. This appears in the Mumon Kan, the Gateless Gate, which is one of the classic koan collections. A monk said to the master Joshu, "I've just entered the monastery, please teach me." And Joshu said, "Have you eaten your rice porridge?" And the monk said, "I've eaten." And then Joshu said, "You had better wash your bowl." And at that moment, the monk was enlightened. So a koan is the nature of a koan, that puzzle is not the right word, but it's something that is designed to frustrate the logical mind. Like, why is it that just being told to do the dishes would enlighten somebody, you know? But it's communicating something at a much more visceral level, you might say. And so one way to work with that koan is certainly the Zen insistence that you know, you live out the ideals of Buddhism through the ordinary everyday manual chores, through washing the dishes, through sweeping the floor, doing the laundry, like all these ordinary everyday chores are part and parcel of monastic life. But another way to think about it is the following, sort of an extended analogy. You know, we eat a meal on a bowl or a plate. And then after we're done, the proper thing to do is to wash that plate, wash that bowl, so that it's open, clean, ready to receive the next meal, you know? Much in the same way, our mind at any one moment is full of an experience, just like the plate is full of a meal. After we're done with the experience, just as with the plate, the proper thing to do is to clear the mind, clean the mind, so it is empty, open, to receive the next experience. You know, none of us would ever put dirty food-encrusted plates back into our cabinet, you know. And then we'd be eating Wednesday with the scraps of Monday and Tuesday's meals, you know, caked onto the plate. You know, that would be disgusting. No one would do that. But in point of fact, we always go into the next experience holding on to pieces of the last experience. You know, I mean, in a way, Joshua was saying we treat our plates better than we treat our own minds. And so there's a, what Buddhism and especially what Zen is really emphasizing is this deep openness, this almost like an innocent openness in each moment, fully able to receive the richness, the full potency of each experience. And so being present is powerful in many ways and powerful for many reasons. One of the reasons that being present is so powerful, it's a little harder to talk about. It has to do with this idea of eternity. Now, the modern world has thoroughly set us up to misunderstand what eternity is. We think of eternity as time going on forever, you know, infinite amount of time. That's not what eternity is, not in the classical understanding at any rate. Eternity is another dimension. You know, you might say, you know, very classical religion, you know, humans exist in time, God exists in eternity. You know, time is the realm of becoming. It's the realm of flow. It's the realm of constantly arriving, constantly leaving. Eternity is a realm of being. I don't know that you'd say stillness, but sort of a dynamic fixity, you might say. And one way to visualize it, and you know, I, admittedly, this is slightly mathematical. I have a mathematical background. But one way you might visualize this, if you imagine a horizontal line as the line of time, you know, so one direction's past, one direction is future, and then imagine a vertical line is the line of eternity. And where those two lines cross, the origin point, you might say, that's the present moment. So the present moment has access not only to past and future, but to eternity. And we could even be fancy and say one direction of eternity is the direction of immanence and the other is the direction of transcendence, the eternity of farthest beyond, the eternity of deepest within. And of course, Hinduism says those two are identical. When we start to taste something of the eternal, we have an experience that sometimes we use the word timeless. We have a timeless experience. And often people have timeless experiences, you know, for example, they see a beautiful sunset or the nighttime stars or you know, a particularly meaningful, deep meaningful conversation. And something just in the moment is so emotionally deep that there's a timeless quality. And so sometimes people just have a breakthrough experience of it. The more present we can be, the more fully focused we can be on being in the present moment, the more we can invite the timeless. And when we invite the timeless, we are utterly transforming our relationship with time. So at this point, I'm going to share the quote sheet, and there are a few poems that I want to share on the quote sheet. So the quote sheet is in chat there. The first two are from the first of the four quartets from T.S. Eliot. "Go, go, go," said the bird. "Humankind cannot bear very much reality. Time past and time future, what might have been and what has been, point to one end, which is always present." And I love that little turn of a phrase, what might have been and what has been. You know, we are shaped by the actual things that have happened, but we're also shaped by the things that might have happened, almost happened, but didn't, you know. The roads that we didn't take, those shape us quite a bit also. And it's, how can I say, I don't want to encourage any kind of Buddhist fundamentalism where it's, you know, you should never think about the past or never think about the future. You know, it's wonderful to learn from the past. It's wonderful to make plans for the future. You know, where is our emotional energy? You know, are we getting caught in the past? Are we getting caught in the future? Or do we realize that thinking about the past and thinking about the future serves the end of being fully present? The second quote from T.S. Eliot, time past and time future are allowed but a little consciousness. To be conscious is not to be in time, but only in time can the moment in the rose garden, the moment in the arbor where the rain beat, the moment in the drafty church at Smokefall be remembered, involved with past and future. Only through time, time is conquered. And there's this very real way that we are creatures of time. Our body exists in time, you know? And so, you know, not to fight that, but to embrace that. And it's precisely through embracing and going deep into the experience of time that we have the experience of eternity. So we're not finding eternity through an escape, but by going deeper into time. From E.E. Cummings, a bit hard to parse as E.E. Cummings often is, in times a noble mercy of proportion with generosities beyond believing. So right away, just this incredibly abundant experience of time, noble mercy of proportion, generosities beyond believing. Though flesh and blood accuse him of coercion or mind and soul convict him of deceiving. So flesh and blood are saying that time is forcing us to do things. Mind says that time tricks us. Whose ways are neither reason or unreasoned. His wisdom cancels conflict and agreement. Saharas have their century, 10,000 of which are smaller than a rose's moment. And the whole idea that when we have that deep experience of the rose's moment, that timeless experience and somehow is richer than, you know, 10,000 Saharas, the lifetimes of Saharas, that sort of thing. And then from William Blake, who really was a Buddhist, even though he didn't know he was a Buddhist, he who binds himself to joy does the winged life destroy, but he who kisses life as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. So from the wise Roman emperor Marcus Aurelius, the philosopher king, you should live your life as if you are ready to say goodbye at any moment, as if the time you have left is a pleasant surprise. Thomas Carlyle says, silence is as deep as eternity. Speech is as shallow as time. Good old Henry David Thoreau said, you must live in the present, launch yourself on every wave, and find your eternity in each moment. A beautiful one from the poet Tagore, a butterfly counts not months, but moments, and has time enough. Grenville Kleiser says, there are many fine things which you mean to do someday under what you think will be more favorable circumstances, but the only time that is yours is the present. Incredibly wise man Dag Hammarskjöld, who was Secretary General of the United Nations. Each day, the first day, each day of life, each morning we must hold out the chalice of our being to receive, to carry, and to give back. It must be held out empty, for the past must be reflected in its polish, its shape, and its capacity. So again, this idea of bringing ourselves empty to the day to receive it fully. Philip Kaplow, who wrote a lot about Zen, wrote, you yourself are time, your body, your mind, and the objects around you. Plunge into the river of time and swim, instead of standing on the banks and noting the coursing of the currents. Tyson Dishimaru says, time is not a line, but a series of now points. Sidney Harris says, quite simply, the time to relax is when you don't have time for it. Clarice Lispector says, "At this moment is a rare thing because only sometimes do I step with both feet on the land of the present. Usually one foot slides toward the past, the other slides toward the future, and I end up with nothing." Janet Frame says, "There is no past, present, future. Using tenses to divide time is like making chalk marks on water." Marion Woodman says, "It is amazing that our souls are eternal essences with all their hopes and dreams and visions as an eternal world are contained within these temporal bodies." Mary Oliver says, "To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your life, your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, let it go." Damn, very easy to say, very hard to live up to that ideal. Bruce Lee says, "If you love life, don't waste time, for time is what life is made of." Very practical. Annie Dillard says, "Each day is a god. Every day is a god, and each day is a god, and holiness holds forth in time. I worship each god. I praise each day, splintered down, and wrapped in time like a husk of many colors spreading at dawn over the mountain split." Steve Jobs, in that famous Stanford commencement speech, said, "Your time is limited, so don't waste it living somebody else's life. Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living the result of other people's thinking. Don't let the noise of other people's opinions drown out your inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. Then somehow already you know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary." Karen Mazin Miller says, "You don't have to wait for happiness because there's no time but now to be happy. You don't have to go somewhere else because there's no place but here to find it. You don't have to do something else because there's nothing more to it. You don't have to get something else because everything you already have is enough. You just have to be happy."